Hello again. Welcome to, in this case, Unit 8, and this is the Christian Leaders Institute course on practical mathematics. We're going to start by looking at using algebra, and it'll be to look at business problems, but we'll also look at setting goals and at least give a brief look at profit and loss and how you handle that. So let's get rolling here, and using algebra to solve business problems. Now, this may not be a difficulty, but it's something that you need to work out related to whatever business you're in. Well, of course, that's useful to be able to do. When you've got a problem, the first thing you want to do is look and see what you actually know. I cannot imagine a problem where you don't have at least a little data to work with. And of course, problems that are stated, at least for homework problems in this course, you'll be given data, all the data you need. And in this day of internet, it's quite likely you can find the data you want if you know how to do a good search, which most of us do. So establish what you know, find out what you need to know, and find it out. And then ask how the different parts of the issue you're looking at relate to each other. Things connect with each other. You know that as well as I do. And sometimes, as you get the relationship put together, the problem starts getting simpler, unfortunately also sometimes more complicated. But once you've got those interactions together and understood, you're all the way there. And of course, you have to look at what you need to know. I already alluded to that. When you've finally got your problem defined in terms of what you know, how things interact, that may tell you further things you've got to dig up in terms of information from your own records, maybe on the internet, maybe in a library, so that you can set up and solve a problem. So let's look at a handful of problems so you can get a feel as to how we resolve them. So here's problem number one. You make gadgets. You make them 500 per year. Who knows what this thing is, but it's called a gadget. You make 500 of them a year. You have a business plan. You want to expand to 1,200 gadgets a year. The market's booming. You need to be making more gadgets. The demand is good. You want to slowly but surely get to 1,200 gadgets. Can you do it? Now that's gadgets per year. You expect to be able to increase that production by about 75 gadgets a year. Well, these things must be tough to make if you're only making about 6.5 of them a month, or increasing by 6.5 a month. But whatever it is, that's what you want to do. And you're going to take out a 10-year loan. Over that period of time, you're going to be taking money from that 10-year loan. You're going to build additional infrastructure to your gadget-making facility. You know, maybe a new plant, maybe a new storage facility for parts. I don't know. But you're going to do that. What you want to know is it reasonable to think you may be able to hit the planned production before the loan is paid off? Obviously, you're hoping to be in full production sooner, being able to pay the loan off more easily, maybe even make a little bit of profit beyond that. All right? Here's your problem. So let's say that the number of years I need to get to 1,200 gadgets a year, let's call that the variable X. I don't know what X is yet, but it's what I want to find. So we know that 500 plus 75x is equal to 1,200. Every year we increase by around 75 a year. Simple. So moving the 500, subtracting 500 from both sides, we now have 75x equals 700. Dividing both sides by 75, we've got x equals 9 1/3 years. Hey, it is less than 10 years. This is economically feasible, perhaps, or at least feasible somehow. I've got to give you a little bit of a proviso here. This actually may not be the correct solution. Now, I've done the math absolutely correctly. We've set the problem up absolutely correctly. There are some assumptions that are being made that are not necessarily valid. It assumes that in 6 months, you'll increase your output of gadgets by 37.5 gadgets, and half of that in 3 months, etc. A nice, smooth, linear increase. Yeah, right. And that means every minute you'll be increasing your production by a fraction of a gadget. Wrong answer. What will happen is that your production will most likely increase by jumps. As you get your new gadget-making machinery in, whatever that would look like, as you add new employees, maybe you get the building put together for the outside and you can now add three new employees all at once doing all that. So it's going to go up in steps, not as a simple, smooth line. That means you need to treat this result as what it is, a quick, rough approximation. That gives you a ballpark as to what you can look at, but don't hang your hat on it. Use it for planning. Use it for making decisions. But don't expect that in exactly 9 years, 4 months, which is 9 1/3 years, you'll suddenly be up to 1,200. You may be up to 1,500 by then. You only may be up to 1,100. It's going to take another month. I don't know. But you see what I'm driving at. Essentially, all models that you're going to work with, and in fact, all that anybody works with, are approximations. How good they are, how poor they are, that depends on the assumptions you're making. In this case, the assumption of a smooth increase rather than an increase by jumps isn't really that good of an assumption, but it's still adequate. So, all I'm saying, and this is very important, is do the math, but treat the math with just a little skepticism in terms of your answers. So let's look at problem number two. All right? You have received an order for as many widgets as you can supply as quickly as you can. Okay, I don't know what a widget is either, but it's a nice word. Now, there's some materials you keep in the larder. You know, you've got them in stock. There's a load of that stuff. You know, the things you don't keep stocked are widget frames, and you've got some thingies stocked, but you've got to get the widget frame to put the thingies on. Now, George, he's in your thingy assembly line. He puts one thingy on the bottom. And the length of time it takes George to get that one thingy that needs put on the bottom put in place, Carol, who is not having to bend over, can put two thingies on top. And that's as many thingies as you need for your widget. Okay, I'm having too much fun with names. Take me as I am. I've got 84 thingies in storage. It's going to be a while before I can get more thingies, but I need to know how many widget frames. I need to know how many thingies to put in George's thingy box and how many thingies that Carol's going to need in her thingy box. Okay. So let's start by trying to solve this. Here's more on problem two. Let's say that George has T thingies. T for thingy. Oh, boy. So his thingy supply is T. Carol's thingy supply is going to be 2T. She's going to need two thingies for every thingy that George needs, right? Okay. We've got 84 thingies. So T plus 2T equals 74. And just solving that out, T equals 28. So 28 thingies in George's thingy box. Carol gets 56 thingies in her thingy box. And we need a rush order on 28 frames for those thingies so that we can have those widget frames in place to get her done. Again, this is kind of elementary stuff. I admit that. But the principles are what we need to be learning. Now, here's a little bit more complicated problem. Problem three. Jim farms 120 acres. Grows corn and soybeans on those acres. Obviously, he lives around here. Jim's got $1,310 for buying and planting seed. As you can tell by the figures, this is totally an unrealistic amount of money. It would be much more than that a farmer would have. Corn costs $15 an acre to plant, but it yields $24 profit an acre. That's not bad. Soybeans only cost $8 to plant over an acre, and you only get $13 profit per acre. So, Jim wants to plant as much corn and soybeans as he can afford, and he'd kind of like to know what, if anything, he's going to see in terms of profit. Well, these are basic business questions. So, let's set this up. Say that S is the acre of soybeans. S on soybeans. Okay, I'm not creative. I just use easy stuff here to remember. C equals acres of corn. We've defined our variables. We know that adding the number of acres of corn and soybeans, we want it to be the full 120 acres. We also know that I've got $1,310 and 8 times the number of acres of soybeans plus 15 times the number of acres of corn has got to equal that amount of money. Let's get moving. Now let's see what the easiest thing to do would be is to solve for S in that first line. So whatever S is, it's equal to 120 minus C. Now let's plug that into the 8 times S. So here's your parentheses. We've got a phrase here. So we multiply 8 times this and 8 times this. We get this. We can now transform it like this. You subtract 960 from 1310 from both sides. That clears that here. You add the 8 to the 15, you've got 7C left. Okay, that means 50 acres of corn. That means 70 acres of soybeans. So if we have 50 acres of corn and 70 acres of soybeans, what's my profit going to look like? There's how you figure it out. 50 acres at $24 profit per acre, 14 acres at $70 an acre, 1,200 plus 980, 2,180. Hey, not bad. You don't quite double your money, but you get pretty decent profit there. Again, very simple to set up, very simple to solve. A lot of your business analyses may be more complex than this. In a real-world farming situation, for instance, you've got to guess what your likely price is going to be to sell that, however much you're going to get per acre. You don't know what your yield per acre is going to be. So a lot of this is a little more complicated than it looks, but still, it gives you a tool with which to work, and that's sometimes all you need. So that's how you can use business decisions made by algebra to help you make the decisions. So let's look a little bit at personal finance again, okay? You've got your budget. You've been looking at your budget. You need to adjust things. How can you improve your personal finance? And frankly, everything I say about personal finance, if you happen to have a business, if you happen to have a ministry, it's going to apply there too. And step one is getting rid of the clutter. Now, clutter can be objects that you have and do not need. Might be able to sell them, might be able to donate them and use the donation as a write-off in taxes, who knows. But get rid of the physical clutter. But clutter can also be expenses that you don't need. Clutter can also be time wasters that you can't afford because you need that time to do something useful. You see what I'm driving at? Clutter can be a lot of different things. Look at your life financially, socially, in terms of your family, and see what things really aren't necessary. That's clutter. Get rid of it. Oh boy, here's an unpopular one. Be honest with your taxes. What was it Jesus said in the Gospels? Render unto Caesar's that which is Caesar's, and unto God what is God's. He was talking about taxes there, rendering it to Caesar. And be truthful about it. Okay, yes, if you can legitimately say that, you know, the government really doesn't actually need me to pay this much taxes, or maybe they need to return a portion of the taxes I've already paid, that's fine, but don't lie to do it. First of all, you get caught doing that, there's some pretty nasty penalties in most countries. I know there are here in the U.S. But secondly, we're called to be truthful as Christians, okay? Don't bear false witness. Does that sound familiar from Exodus chapter 20 and the Ten Commandments? I think it should. And saying that you've got 12 dependents when you only have 4 is not being truthful. It is bearing false witness about your own person. That's something that as a believer we should not be doing. Here's another one that doesn't make points. Stay legal. In terms of personal activities, in terms of business and ministry activities, the only time as a believer that we have the justification of defying the government God has appointed over us, and do not forget, whatever government you have over you, God appointed that government, He set it up. Here in America, yes, we voted for those people, or didn't, depending on who gets in. But the outcome is something God controls. We need to obey them insofar as what they command does not require me to disobey Scripture, which is to say, does not require sin. Now, that sin of commission, it requires me to do something that I believe that the Scriptures will not permit me to do, but also to omit doing something that the Scriptures require me to do. So staying legal does have that little bitty issue that you have to respect. But as long as it doesn't command disobeying the Scriptures, stay legal. And realize that family comes before finance. Okay, God comes first. He gets the tithe off the top, or at least gets whatever we give him off the top, hopefully more than a tithe. But your family comes next. Yeah, get rid of the clutter. Your family is not clutter. That person you married, they deserve some of your time. Maybe a great deal of it. Those kids you two have had, they demand a lot of time and they deserve it. They were brought into the world by your union with your spouse. They are your responsibility, and we are called to train up our children as godly people. And the family is our ministry before anything outside the home is a ministry. Our family is our job, and we have a job so that we can support them. That's something that I don't know about the rest of you people out there that are listening to this. I have trouble remembering it, okay? In my profession, there's a lot of things where it's like life or death for me to deal with for other people. It's easy to forget my family. I need to remember. I'm called to minister to them before anything else. And you need to have a significant emergency fund. What is a significant emergency fund? Tough question. But it's money that you put by, that you've saved, preferably in an interest-bearing account, so that that money is earning money to help you. So that if there's an emergency, somebody rams your car while you're in the store shopping, you come out and your car is totaled. I carry insurance on my vehicle. That's fine. The insurance company will bear the cost of either repairing or replacing that vehicle, but I have a deductible on that policy. I need to make sure I've got the money that I can pay for that deductible so I can get a car that I can use. I get appendicitis. I have to go to the hospital, get that appendix fixed, actually removed. Okay, my medical plan, I've got a deductible on that. I need to have the money set by so I can meet that deductible. Some people work in a field where strikes will often happen, sometimes for 1, 2, 3, 4 months. You'll be staying out of work as the union negotiates with the employer to come to a mutually respectful and mutually acceptable contract for the next several years. You need to have money put by so that during that period of time, you've got enough money to take care of that primary responsibility you have, which is your family. Financial advisors here in the United States advise having a minimum of 3 months worth of money to cover your whole budget, whatever it looks like. The whole budget, pay for everything you have to pay for 3 months. If you can get beyond that, 4 months, 5 months, that's great. My wife and I have been married for, well, at the time I'm dictating this, over 47 years. We now have built up, due to God's grace, enough money that if I was unable to work for a year, we would still be able to get our budget going. Is this me trying to hoard money? No. This is me saying that I want to make sure that there's enough there so that in my kind of business, if I am out for a prolonged period of time, I don't become a burden on everybody else. So these are things to look at in your personal finance. Now, moving on from personal finance, I'd also like to say every line of this applies to business finance. If you have employees, you want to be able to pay those employees during periods of time. Right now, as I'm dictating it, we're in the middle of a global crisis with COVID-19. Businesses are being shut down all over the place just because COVID-19 is out there and they don't want people being infected by COVID-19, and those businesses are ones that are potential infectors. Several of the businesses had money put by where they could keep their employees paid, keep their rent paid, keep their insurance paid. Those businesses are the ones that are going to survive. The ones that didn't, well, the federal government's trying to help them out, but the ones that didn't have an emergency fund stashed, they may not have been able to grow as fast as the other ones, but they're the ones that are going to be able to survive, or at least have a better chance of surviving, the shutdowns and the reduction of business that COVID-19 is forcing on them. And of course, the same thing is true of ministries. Have that put by just in case you need it. So much for finance. Let's look at counting the cost. It's a very scriptural thing. Jesus talked about that. And there's two major kinds of costs. The fixed costs that it doesn't matter how business goes, you're going to pay the same amount every month. I mean, business could boom, business could dwindle off to almost nothing, you're still going to be paying the same thing, okay? So, rental of the facility, or rent of the place where you have your business, rent for your home, your apartment, whatever, okay? Now, that may actually be payment on a loan, maybe, or something like that, but facility rental, that's going to be pretty stable. The cost of buying tools. You know that you're going to wear some tools out, you're going to need to replace them periodically. That's just going to happen every so often. You might have a vehicle that's part of your business. The payments on that vehicle, that's going to be a cost. And of course, other things related to the vehicle as well. Like the insurance on your property, insurance for liability, health insurance for your employees, car insurance for your vehicle or truck insurance or whatever kind of vehicle you've got. Those are things that aren't likely to change from month to month. The wages for your employees. They're going to show up, they're going to put their shift in, they're going to go home. The cost per employee is going to stay pretty stable. Okay, overtime may happen, but that's not a fixed cost. Some of your utilities are going to stay pretty stable. Telephone, your internet provider, cable, possibly the city charge for wastewater handling. Those are going to stay pretty stable. Licenses to continue to perform your business. Here in the United States, you have to have a license for a lot of aspects of businesses. Restaurants have to be licensed to sell food, etc. You have to have a license to practice medicine. You have to have a license to be a dentist. You have to have a license to do engineering. You get my point. Those things are going to come up every once in a while. You know what they're going to cost. That's a fixed cost. If you are doing anything at all, even if it's just one or two projects, see one or two people in your office, or if you see like 500 a month, that cost isn't going to change. Some costs are variable costs. Now, some utilities are variable. Electricity. You know, you start burning the midnight oil at your place where you're working. You've got employees working all night long. You're going to have the lights on. The machines are going to be running all night long. You're going to increase your electrical bill. If you use natural gas, excuse me, you know, if you're doing a lot more heating of things, if it's winter and you're heating system has to run more, you're going to spend more on natural gas. Some phone systems, you're getting charged for more calls than a base amount. You see what I'm driving at. Water that you use, if you jack up the amount of water you use, your water bill may rise. The amount of fuel your vehicles use. The more you drive, the more fuel you use. Not a brain drain. Material for making the product sold. Look, if you're making 110 widgets, you're going to need more thingies than if you're only making 20 widgets. You got to pay for that. And especially those widget frames, man, them things are expensive. Okay, I'm stretching things just a little bit here. But the material for making the product sold, or for planting the ground, or the tools that you're going to need for your services, like cleaning products. If you're doing a lawn thing, the herbicides or the pesticides you might use, all of those things for that product or for that service, the more of that service you do, the more of that product you sell, the more those things are going to cost you. This applies for providing the service. I just related to that. If you're cleaning offices at night, and you clean 20 offices, well, that's going to take a lot more than if you're only cleaning up three. Goes to reason. Office supplies, you know, the paper for the copier, stamps for mailing, or, you know, postage for your postage meter, files, filing for envelopes, you get the point. I mentioned postage. That's an office supply. The more bills you have to mail out, the more you're going to spend on postage. So we need to be able to figure your break-even cost. What's the minimum amount you have to charge for the service you're providing or the product you're selling, okay? How do you calculate that? Let's just say you expect to sell N of whatever you're talking about, whatever N is, okay? The break-even cost for that is equal to fixed costs per month divided by N plus the variable costs per unit, and that would be times N. Or the variable cost per unit, and then the fixed costs divided by N. So that's your break-even cost per unit. Needless to say, the fact that you need an income needs to be considered part of the fixed costs. Don't be ridiculous about the income you decide you deserve. But again, calculate the value of your being part of the system, of your being there as part of the fixed costs. Hey, you got to eat. You got to pay your rent. Okay, I've made my point. So let's look at a real-life example of this, okay? The taco shop. For some reason, you're able to get $20 a month as the rental for your space. You've got somebody that's willing to work with you on this, and you've chosen to pay them $150 a month. You figure you're going to be selling tacos after school. You're going to sell maybe 20 tacos a day. You're going to do that 5 days a week. And at 4 weeks a month, that's 400 tacos a month. That ain't bad. Again, some days it'll only be 15 tacos. Some days it'll be 25 tacos. Let's ignore that and just stay with 20. So let's take another look at the taco shop. Your taco needs hamburger. Costs you $1.50 a pound, which makes 6 tacos. You can already look at that and tell me I'm using figures picked out of the air. I don't get hamburger that cheap around here. Your taco shells, a dozen for $2.40. And you can make a dozen tacos with a dozen taco shells. Lettuce is 96 cents a head, and it makes a dozen tacos. You have to shred it up. But that's what your employee is there to help you do. Tomatoes, $1.28 a pound. And a pound of tomatoes will take care of 32 tacos. All right. Onions at 84 cents a pound. Chop those up, you've got 14 tacos. There's one I definitely want my employee doing. I cry like a baby when I'm cutting onions. Taco seasoning, it's 90 cents a package. One package of taco seasoning will season 1 pound of hamburger. The price may be fake, but the reality is it's about what it is. 1 pound per package, 1 package per pound. So here's your costs. This didn't quite line up correctly, but for each taco, you're spending a quarter on hamburger, 20 cents for the shell, 8 cents for lettuce, 4 cents for tomatoes, 6 cents worth of onions, 15 cents worth of spice. So in terms of the variable costs per taco, that taco is going to cost you 78 cents. That's not the whole thing. If you do 400 tacos, that's going to take $312 worth of materials. You're going to pay 20 bucks worth of rent. Your employee is going to cost you 150 bucks. This didn't line up well. I apologize for that. The total cost is going to be 482 bucks a month. So, per taco, that's going to be about $1.20 and a half cents. Call it $1.21. So this is where you do your homework. Okay, get out there, find out what everybody else is charging for tacos. If they're charging a buck a taco, you're sunk. Don't even try. If they're charging a buck and a half a taco, you're going to make a slim profit if you match their price. If they're selling $2 a taco and you can charge $1.75 a taco, you're going to make a good profit and probably do a whole lot more than just 5 days a week, 20 tacos a day. Again, this is why this kind of calculation is important. So let's say you decide to do this for 600 tacos. You figure, hey, I can undercut their price. I can make lots more tacos. They'll sell like crazy. Here's what it's going to look like for 600 tacos. Now, your variable costs are going to go up. 468 bucks instead of 312. The rent, still 20 bucks. Your employee, still 150 bucks. You've now shot 638 bucks, so your break-even per taco is $1.06. At $1.75, you've got $1,050 that you're going to take in, and you're going to make a net profit of $412. That isn't bad. You could probably afford to give your employee a raise. So much for this unit, and I will see you in Unit 9.